When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I am joined, as always, by my buddy, my good friend, my pal, Mike Luciano. Mike, we are 1 week away from roster cuts. Training camp is basically over. We just had Jets-Giants joint practice today. Final preseason games on Saturday. Week one is right around the corner. How are you feeling today, buddy? What's going on?
Well, I'm feeling optimistic, which I felt optimistic last year, and we know what happened. So it's dangerous, but... Mm-hmm. Aside from one big guy who's still not here, Mr. Reddick, outside of that, a lot of good things in the Jets fandom right
cautious
now.
Cautious optimism.
We'll get into some of that. We will also get into the unfortunate side of things, which are roster cuts and position battles, that there's going to be a winner and there's going to be a loser. And some of those losers may have to seek some new employment, unfortunately. But we will get into all of that. And we'll take a look at Jets-Giants, what's been going on with the joint practice, the preseason game, all that good stuff. But, of course, before that, I'm just going to let you know you can find us on YouTube, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. That's where we are. And if you want to help the stream, you can do that by liking it. You can do it by subscribing. They both really help boost us up the charts. And we may have a couple fun little things coming in the future. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, in terms of how you can support the show monetarily. So we will update you when that information becomes available, but keep an eye on that. And as always, I'm going to just plug it one more time because he was a really great guest and a really good interview. Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers by Ian O'Connor. Go check out that interview if you have not. And if you haven't bought the book yet, I don't know what you're doing with your free time or your disposable income here, because it is a really compelling read. I'm like most of the way through it in a couple days. So that is the book club recommendation. But if you didn't come for the book club stuff and you came for football, let's talk about some football. The preseason is pretty much over. It's two-thirds over. I feel like a lot of the Jets coaches kind of have their minds made up about who's going to be on the roster, who's really showed a lot, barring some overwhelming changes in how things have been happening in the next couple of days. It seems like a lot of the guys who need to make a mark already have made their mark. With some preseason standouts. Now, if I had to pick one, gun to my head, you got to pick one guy where you're saying this guy's going to have a really good season based on what I've seen out of him in the preseason. I mean, Justin, I'm sorry to steal your thunder. I got to go with my guy, Braylon Allen.
That's all right. I wasn't even going to mention him. That's all right. That's good.
A guy who I love the pick. I was curious about how they keep drafting running backs. I'm like, when's this guy going to play? But when he got picked in the late fourth round, I was surprised he was even there. I thought the latest he would go was like the end of the third round because he's so young. He's so fast. He's so freaking big for a running back. He's 6'3", 230. Legitimately, I don't think there's one. I don't think anybody's lying there with those measurements. And boy, did he look like it, because he looked like Braylon Allen of the first 2 years at Wisconsin. Because Braylon Allen the last year at Wisconsin, he kind of a lot of tippy toes, a lot of dancing around. I know that was partially moving to an air raid system that they tried to bring to Wisconsin, which was just a dramatic shift of offensive tone that just didn't suit him well. It seems like Nathaniel Hackett, who to his credit, if he's good with anything, he seems like he's a running backs coach. And he seems like he's good with running backs. Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, Leonard Fournette, especially hard charging, go that way running backs, power guys. That seems to be where he's good. And he seems to have instilled in Braylon Allen, like, look, you're 235 pounds. There are linebackers in the NFL that aren't that big. You can just run over them. And we saw that a lot in the Washington game. We've seen that a lot in practice. Maybe they give him a little bit of a longer leash in the third game. I'm not sure if they will, because I think he's really solidified himself as a big part of this offense. Like, I don't think he's going to get like 15 carries a game, but he's definitely going to get, in my opinion, like 6-7 touches a game as a fourth round rookie, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, for sure. Breece Hall is obviously RB1. Breece Hall is going to be not only the Jets' top running back, but he is a focal point of the he is the focal point of the offense. The offense is going to run through, whether it's on the ground or in the air. In a lot of ways, it's going to run through Breece Hall. But Braylon Allen's development and emergence this summer is honestly one of the most important storylines that we're people are talking about it, but I think we kind of just assumed going into the summer, like, oh, somebody's going to emerge and be that RB2. That was not a given. Like, the Jets drafted two day three running backs, and they brought back Izzy Abanikanda, who was a day three running back last year, and said, one of these guys will hopefully emerge as a competent RB2. That's a lot of pressure to put on three guys who you don't know can play at the NFL level. Thankfully, Isaiah Davis has had a good summer. He's shown that he can play at the NFL level. I think Izzy Abanikanda has put together a pretty strong preseason. I'm not sure he sticks around, but he's proven at least that maybe he can play at the NFL level. But Braylon Allen has not only proven that he can be an NFL running back, but he's somebody who I'm already confident can be an important part of his offense, as you were talking about, Mike. And it's not even just like the big things for him. Like, it's not just the flashy runs or whatever. This is a guy who is 20 years old. He's going to be 20 for his entire rookie season. When he takes the field for the Jets next month, he will be the youngest player to ever play a snap for the Jets. And I believe he's the youngest player in the entire NFL right now.
But I can't remember the last time somebody who was 20.
Daniil Hunter? Isn't he like 24?
I think a guy for the Texans, I remember a while back, Amami Okoye, who was like 19 or 20 or something like that. Tremaine Edmonds, I remember, was very
good. Tremaine Edmonds too, yes. Tremaine Edmonds as well. But it's the little stuff with Braylon Allen. We saw that a lot in the preseason, whether it's the pass blocking, whether it's the pass catching. It's all of the little things that have just added up and made me go, okay, this guy not only has the talent, but the intangibles are there too. And that's really, really important if you are the second running back on the depth chart. The Jets really want a guy they can trust in pass protection. They really want a guy they can trust on short yardage to fall forwards, pick up those extra yards, and they want a guy that can catch out of the backfield. And Braylon Allen can do all of that by what we've seen in the summer. Really, really important development for him throughout the preseason, throughout training camp. I'm with you, Mike. I wasn't going to bring him up first, but I'm really glad you did bring him up because I'm glad we got to talk about him.
So who are you bringing up first?
I'm going to probably go to the defensive side. And I think the guy that impressed me the most this summer, and I don't think it's somebody who's going to have a huge role this year, but going back a few weeks ago, he might have even been on the roster bubble. It's Jarque Bernard Converse. Friend of the show, Jarque Bernard Converse. Of course, we interviewed him a week before he was drafted by the Jets. On his birthday, he was drafted by the Jets, by the way. Imagine that. He's somebody who, if you go back a month ago, we're talking about him as a roster bubble guy. We're talking about him as maybe he can make the team as that sixth corner, that 10th defensive back, whatever you want to call him. But I'm so, so encouraged and impressed by what we've seen from him this summer. He missed all of the summer last year. I think he was dealing with, I think it was a foot injury, was on PUP, started the year on PUP, or PUP or NFI, one of the two, missed the whole first half of the year, only played special teams when he came back. He didn't really get to develop at all in his first year with the Jets, at least in his first summer. So having him not only be healthy for most of the summer, I know he's now dealing with the groin injury, that's unfortunate, but it does sound like he'll be ready for week one. But having him put together a healthy summer at his new position, or new old position, whatever you want to call it, it's incredibly, incredibly encouraging. And I know we already talk about how the Jets have the best cornerback room in the NFL with their trio of Sauce Gardner, DJ Reed, and Michael Carter, but their depth is really good too. Like, even behind them, Brandon Echols is a perfectly fine cornerback 4 on pretty much any team. And I think he can push for like a cornerback 3 on some bad rosters out there. Quantes Stiggers is proven that he can play at the NFL level. And now you got Jarque Bernard Converse. You have 6 corners. Like, they're 6 deep at a position that is one of the most important positions in the NFL. So I want to give a shout out to Jarque Bernard Converse. I believe he's also, again, take PFF grades for what they're worth. I believe he is PFF's highest graded Jets player this summer in the preseason. So just what a summer for Jarque Bernard Converse. Couldn't be happy for him.
And you got to remember too, though, this is also a position where they might lose DJ Reed in the offseason.
Absolutely. He is auditioning. Jarque Bernard Converse, Quantes Stiggers, even Brandon Echols, they're auditioning for 2025 starting jobs. And I think there's a real chance that Bernard Converse is a week one starter for the Jets next year if his development continues on his trajectory.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot of guys will transfer to like a bigger program for just the 1 year of their last year to boost themselves in the NFL eye. I would argue he almost hurt himself that way because he was a 4 year guy at Oklahoma State. His last year, he was all conference. I think he led the conference in pass breakups. Big 12 being what it is, the old Big 12. I hate realignment, but the old Big 12 being what it is, I get all that. But first team all conference is first team all conference. He was the best one there. Then he goes to LSU, a little tougher competition, not as good, not always healthy all the time. Like, I would argue if he came out after that Oklahoma State year, he probably gets picked maybe two rounds higher. Yeah, so the Jets have another great value steal where they get maybe a fourth round talent, maybe even more, because he's such a really good athlete in the sixth round. And then here he is kind of showing everybody, hey, I probably should have gone a little bit higher.
Very possible. Very, very possible. And I'm happy that he's been able to practice all summer at one position and kind of get reacquainted to that position. And now he's a full-time quarterback. And he had a great preseason. It's unfortunate he can't play in the last week, but thankfully the groin injury doesn't appear to be serious. I'm very excited for his future.
I want to get to a comment from Chris Gazzola in chat. Lazard seems like a waste of a roster spot. Seems like Brownlee could easily replace him. I like Lazard on the practice squad, though. I want to talk about Brownlee for a little bit because
First, Lazard and practice squad finances. It can't happen. He's got to be on the active roster. I think Lazard's been okay this summer. He's been more of what I expected Alan Lazard to be, which is still inconsistent, but you know, he at least flashed a little bit more. He'll be on the active roster. He'll be wide receiver 4, but let's talk about Jason Brownlee.
If he's Green Bay Lazard, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Green Bay Lazard.
I have a take on Brownlee. I want to hear what your take is first.
Because Brownlee last year, I know we were pounding the table how often for Jason Brownlee. He played in 7 games, got 5 starts.
Yeah.
311 snaps in those games. So that's 66% of snaps in the games that he played in. You know how many passes he caught, Justin?
I know he had a touchdown. Four.
You are correct. Five for 56 yards.
Cool, baby.
In 311 snaps.
Yeah.
Quarterback issues being what it is, offensive issues being what it is. If you're playing that level of snaps and you're getting 5 catches in 7 games, not the best indictment on you. But Brownlee is the only person to catch a touchdown in the preseason for the Jets right now. He definitely looks a lot more explosive in practice than I think he did last year, where he was just this big guy who was kind of an unknown. Now I think they're showing a little bit more verticality to his game. We'll get into this talking about the wide receiver room because obviously I think it's going to be dependent on who can play special teams. And I don't know if Brownlee can yet. I think he might be able to. I think he's a good enough athlete where he can. Yeah. But purely in terms of receiving ability, just go out, run routes, catch the ball. Purely on that, I think of the players competing for those final wide receiver spots, I think Brownlee may have the highest receiving potential. Is that enough to keep him on? I don't know. But I think that there's enough there where the Jets could at least talk themselves into rolling the dice on him one more time.
And that's essentially why he made the team last year, because he was pretty much inactive for most weeks. Even when he was active, he didn't play specials. He played 13 special team snaps all year. Now, they have been trying him on special teams in the summer. I believe they did that last year, too. And obviously, that didn't mean that it translated to the regular season. But we'll see. We can talk about this more when we talk about the wide receivers, but the guy who's caught my eye is Brandon Smith, especially if we're talking about preseason standouts. I mean, former UFL guy came over and essentially has had that UFL chemistry with Adrian Martinez. incredibly small sample size here, but he is, I believe, the only wide receiver in the entire NFL this preseason with at least three contested catch or contested targets who has caught all of them. Very, very small sample size, but if you're looking for like a bigger bodied contested catch guy, Brandon Smith has outplayed Jason Brownlee, at least in games, at least in the preseason. Now, I don't know if that's going to be enough for him to usurp him from the pass him on the depth chart, but if we're going based on merit alone, based on how they played in the preseason, I'd give the nod to Brandon Smith right now.
Let's go to another Brandon in chat really quick. Brandon R. I'm not really excited about the receivers outside of Wilson, Williams, and Corley. I hope we don't have to see too many. I hope we don't have to see him either, but Mike Williams is coming off an injury. Malachi Corley's a rookie. Xavier Gibson's a second-year guy. There's going to be some fluctuations. Somebody's inevitably going to miss some time. Like, not everybody's going to play all 17 games.
And that's why
we have to have depth here. And in the modern NFL, there's no such thing as too many good wide receivers.
Yes. And that's why, that's why two things. One, that's why when I said, hey, maybe the Jets should have looked into bringing back Corey Davis. I don't know what's going on there, but he's trying out with the Bills. I was under the impression he wanted to stay home close to Nashville. If he's trying out for the Bills, unless he's got something against the Jets, hey, we should look in maybe.
Back and spook them maybe?
I have no idea. And two, that's also why you have Breece Hall. You have Tyler Conklin. You have other guys who, thankfully, this receiving core is not just the wide receivers, because on paper, the Jets wide receiver room, it can be good. I'm not going to say it can't be really good, because Garrett Wilson's an all-world talent. He has potentially a top five wide receiver in the NFL. Mike Williams, if he's healthy, is a damn good wide receiver too. And then we'll see what Malachi Corley, Xavier Gibson can bring you. But the floor is decently low with just the wide receivers. So it's really good that you have guys like Breece Hall, like Tyler Conklin, who can also eat up some of those targets as well.
So moving on to...
Oh, and then also one more. We'll get one more comment here. Sorry.
Ooh, yeah, notable. All right.
Let's get one more comment here from Chris, who's just bringing up Xavier Gibson, because we can talk about him too. Right. Xavier Gibson might be all right in the slot. He had a good day, apparently. Yeah, Gibson is going to be your slot receiver to start the year. It's not going to be Corley. As a chance, Corley takes that role as the year goes on, but that's Xavier Gibson's job to lose right now. I mean, I know he missed some time in the summer, but he's looked good when he's been out there. I think that's a weak starting slot receiver if you're looking NFL-wide, but obviously the long-term plan is not that he's going to be your long-term starting slot receiver. So we'll see if Corley can eventually take that role. I imagine Corley's role will be a little bit more limited to trick plays, to screens, just kind of ways to get the ball in his hands as he continues to develop his route running. But yeah, Gibson's wide receiver three right now.
Gibson's fine. I just hate that line of thinking, except for quarterbacks. Quarterbacks, I'm fine with it, where you get a guy who's a bridge, you wait until you feel confident in your youngest guy that can handle everything, and then you put him in there. I'm fine with that. But I don't like this idea of, well, this guy's going to be our slot receiver, and eventually we're just going to make Malachi Corley the starter. Well, those plans don't always work like that.
They don't. You're absolutely right.
And if the Jets did pick Malachi Corley with the first pick of the third round after trading up for him, and he can't beat out Xavier Gibson, I'm going to be honest, that's really concerning. So I would prefer at some point, like if it's 50-50 or even 55-45, I'd want them to roll with Corley. And we're going to see Corley eventually. I don't think they're going to Ardarius Stewart him and just exile him to the end of the bench. But I would like to see him sooner rather than later. Just I want to see if they even have something in him.
I agree. I don't think they trust his route running right now. And maybe that's to be expected. He's playing an incredibly different system than what he played at Western Kentucky. His role is being changed dramatically. I think the majority of ways he's going to find playing time early on in the season is going to be special teams. It's going to be if he can beat out, if he can win that kick return job opposite Xavier Gibson, he'll get some touches there. I think it'll be manufactured touches on offense to start. I think that's how it's going to go. I don't know. I'm not going to speak to whether that's concerning or not. I just think that's I think right now the Jets have Xavier Gibson here, and then it's a couple of steps below to Malachi Corley. I don't think it's like a 55-45. I think they're pretty confident Gibson is the better receiver right now. I don't – whether you think that that's concerning or not, I don't know. But I think that's how they view him right now. But I agree with what Brandon's saying here. If Wilson does miss any time, crisis is a strong word, but it definitely would be really bad.
Like Rodgers is crisis. Wilson would be – yeah.
Garrett Wilson is one of the – and I've seen – I saw this conversation going around on Jets Twitter the last couple of days. Actually, I want to get your thoughts on that, Mike. Who do you think are the three most indispensable players in this roster? I think Garrett Wilson is one of them.
On the roster
right now, three players who, if the Jets lost them, it would be disastrous.
Rodgers, Sauce, Quinnen.
Ooh. Is it crazy for me to put Garrett Wilson over Sauce? Is that? Yes. I don't know if that's crazy. Yes. Obviously, I think Sauce Gardner is the better player at their position, but at the corner depth, I'd be much more concerned if Garrett Wilson was out. Because, like, look, you're asking Quantes Stiggers, Jarquinad Converse, Brandon Echols, whoever, to step into a starting role instead of Alan Lazard, Malachi Corley at this stage, you know, whoever.
I just feel like when you're that level of player, like, you have to be up there. When you're in that rare tier that Sauce is in, at worst, the worst thing you could say is he's probably the third best corner in the league.
Yeah, and I don't.
And you gotta like argue, like you gotta like twist yourself into knots to put two other guys over.
I think
at worst, that level, I think that no matter what happens around you, you're in your top three most indispensable.
I think at worst he's second, and I honestly don't even see a debate for that. Like I try my hardest not to be biased with this stuff, but bro, the stats. There's no – the only argument you could possibly make is how he doesn't follow receivers. That's the only thing you could legitimate
– And even then, Richard Sherman was the best in the league for like three years. He didn't follow receivers.
Sauce's numbers over the last 2 years are better than any two-year stretch Richard Sherman ever had, like statistically.
And Richard Sherman had like 8 picks a couple times.
So. Right, and that's – you could also use interceptions against Sauce Gardner. You could actually – you could try and use that argument too. But I agree. We're in agreement on how incredible Sauce Gardner is.
I almost kind of feel like Patriots fans with Brady in the way that not that they're anywhere near that good all time. I'm just saying, like, when you're a fan of a particular team and your guy's the best at his position and pretty much every stat will point to that fact.
Yeah.
Like when you're pointing it out, you sound biased, but really you're just like every point of data we have agrees with me.
But the unfortunate difference was that, obviously, you had Brady haters, but the majority of people agreed Tom Brady was the best quarterback in the NFL. Just like there are some people that might say.
There were years where Peyton was there, but like body of work wise.
Yeah. I guess maybe the narrative changed over time. I mean, if Sauce Gardner does what he's done for the last 2 years, for the next 2-3 years, I do think the narrative will change. Like, it'll get to a point where it's undeniable.
And Aaron Donald with the Rams might be a better.
Maybe, yeah. Where eventually it just became undeniable. And okay, he's clearly the best.
Yeah.
I think I would still put Garrett Wilson above Sauce, though, in terms of players that are indispensable. They can't lose Garrett Wilson. That wide receiver depth, Brandon said it in chat. I agree with him. I don't think the wide receiver depth is very good because you really don't know what you're getting with Mike Williams. You really don't know what you're getting with Malachi Corley. Xavier Gibson has a very clear ceiling, and I don't want to be seeing Alan Lazard getting 80% of reps every single week, you know? So I would also put Breece Hall maybe in that category as well above Sauce Gardner because, look, I know I love Braylon Allen. I'm not ready to, you know, give him 20 touches a game. I don't think that he's ready for that. And I think I think that'd be a huge drop off from Breece Hall to Braylon Allen.
I will say before we move on to our next segment, I just got a Twitter notification because I've been doing a lot of stuff about Zach Wilson lately.
Okay.
We can't go a show. We have a Zach Wilson quota that we have to meet.
This is true. Our boss
Twitter account. The description is BYU fan for life. It is Jokey at Jokey 614-555-81.
Yo, shout out Jokey.
Woo. Totally a real guy. I am by far the worst writer out there, a miserable Jets fan that can't even write non-biased articles. The most unprofessional piece of sports journalism I've ever seen. The absolute worst, guys. I'm number one.
Worst. You made it, dude. Put that in your
fridge. Because I reported that Zach Wilson is going to be the third string quarterback for the Broncos when Bo Nix got named the starter and they're not going to cut Jared Stidham. So Zach Wilson's going to be the third string.
The amount of emails I've gotten saying similar shit over the years, a lot of it Zach Wilson related, just saying the most vile stuff.
Well, like, yeah, because it's Utah and they don't have, you know, smartphones out there yet. So they still got to email you.
They're busy doing other stuff.
I feel like Vernon Maxwell, if you've ever seen him on Twitter, the old Rockets.
Yes,
player,
yes, yes.
Where he's like, sorry, I insulted you, Utah. I didn't know you had internet.
God,
love Vernon. Well, I don't love Vernon Maxwell, kind of a crazy guy, but that particular thing he did was funny.
Fair enough. Well, we're getting send your hate mail to at Mike Luciano on Twitter. Send all your Jet Press hate mail there.
All right. Let's see what else Jokey can come up with. Because Jokey's definitely listening to this podcast. We'll move on to roster battles because there are a couple ones that I'm interested in seeing how they shake out.
Yep.
I've talked about this, I think, more than Justin has. It just interests me more, the whole QB3 battle, because obviously when Jordan Travis is healthy, As Brian in chat says, I can't believe I've been listening to the worst sports reporter for a year and a half. I know, and you stuck with me. What's that say about you?
Out of every single, I mean, that's incredible. If I could find the worst reporter, like the designated worst reporter, I'd
listen. Yeah.
It's cool.
It's not even Skip Bayless, who I thought it was. So I guess now that Skip retired, it's got to be me. So,
man, you were next one. Look at that.
I have placed more of an emphasis on QB3 just because last year scarred me.
Yeah.
And how many years have I gone into a Jets season thinking there's no way Tim Boyle's going to play and then Tim Boyle play? Like, you never know, especially now with Rodgers being hurt. Like, the seal is broken. Anything can happen. And I legitimately am impressed by Adrian Martinez, and I think he could be a really good NFL quarterback. Andrew Peasley, he lost me, I think, in that last game. Overly conservative, very gunch. I get you don't want to throw interceptions because that's not going to help you make the roster either as a fringe player, but you can't be that conservative. Adrian Martinez, who I think pretty much has a UFL paycheck until he decides to stop playing, he was ripping it.
Yeah.
And he showed good mobility. Now, obviously, when Jordan Travis is healthy, I think they're probably going to get rid of one of them. But hypothetically, if Adrian Martinez had to play, I am more confident in him leading the Jets to wins than either Tim Boyle or Trevor Siemian, and he's not that far behind Zach Wilson.
Yeah, I don't think that's a crazy take. I really don't. Obviously, Martinez has his flaws. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Like, I'm not going to sit here now and say I'm confident that he is, like, a true NFL caliber backup quarterback or even with starter potential. I'm not going to say that because I saw some of his flaws in Nebraska. I watched some UFL games, and I you know, even though the guy, he won MVP, he didn't even start the year as their starting quarterback. You see what his flaws are, but he's definitely not afraid to take chances. That is for damn sure. And that was the exact opposite of what we saw from Andrew Peasley. Peasley, it's unfortunate because I think it was a very much a mental thing with him in that game. Like, the moment was way too big for him. He dirted that pass to Braylon Allen, that 4th-and-1 rollout where he just threw it right at his feet. And you could see in that moment, I saw his reaction. And I'm like, oh no, I hope he can shake that off. Cause he was like in his head, like put his hands in his face. And I'm like, all right, that's a brutal miss. And he knows that's a brutal miss. He knows that's a pass he needed to make. And I remember tweeting out, I'm like, it's going to be really interesting to see how he bounces back from that. That was the equivalent of like throwing an interception. Like, that was like a backbreaking mistake that you cannot make. And from there on out, he never recovered. He wasn't even looking downfield. Dude was so scared to make another mistake. And I get it. I understand that perspective and I understand playing that way, but you're not going to win the job doing that. You're just not. And it's unfortunate. So we'll see how he fares on Saturday. But Adrian Martinez, man, he does not strike me as someone who will ever lose confidence. And with his playmaking potential and, you know, his escapability and his ability to make plays on the ground, like, yeah, I think absolutely you have a better chance with him starting over Tim Boyle. He might throw 3 interceptions. He might turn the ball over a good amount, but he's also going to try and make plays. He's going to try and push the ball downfield. If Garrett Wilson's in single coverage, he's going to throw it to Garrett Wilson. It might not be super accurate. He might airmail it, but every once in a while, it might be catchable for Garrett Wilson. With Tim Boyle, with Trevor Siemian, with Andrew Peasley, the way he played this past Saturday, you're not getting that. You're not getting those chances because Trevor Siemian is not passing it more than 5 yards down the field unless you beg him to, unless you hold a gun to his head and force him to do it. He's not going to do it. And so at least Adrian Martinez has that potential. Ideally, we're not going to see him play at all during the regular season. But as we've learned in the past, not everything goes according to plan. We saw Tim Boyle start games with the Jets last year. We've seen
things don't always go according to plan. Has anything ever gone according to plan with this team?
No. Short answer, no. I mean, we've seen Luke Falk start a game for the Jets. We've seen Bryce Petty start. Like, it's just stuff does not go.
You did not see Christian Hackenberg start a game.
Amazingly, incredibly, despite all of the Jets quarterback woes, Christian Hackenberg was still bad enough to not play in a game during the regular season. But yeah, I was, you know, I think obviously Martinez had that really, really bad pass where, you know, the interception last game, and the accuracy is going to be a concern. I think he's going to try and do too much at times. I don't know what caliber, you know, if he's an NFL caliber backup quarterback, but he's fun and I enjoy watching him play. And it's honestly, he's your perfect preseason quarterback. Like, I want to watch him. I don't want to watch James Morgan. I don't want to watch, no offense, Andrew Peasley. I don't want to watch Andrew Peasley refuse to throw the ball longer than 10 yards for an entire half football. I want to watch Adrian Martinez taking chances, just slinging it. And if he throws interceptions, cool. If he fumbles, cool. At least it's fun. At least it's exciting.
I'm the poor sap who thought James Morgan would be pretty good. Me and
we'll have that James Morgan to Kenny. Remember that James Morgan to Kenny Yeboah Hail Mary that I think it was a walk-off winner in the preseason a few years ago? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Might have been 2020. I think that was that might have been COVID year. No, there was no preseason. It was 2020.
He drafted the COVID year.
It was 2021. There was no preseasons with COVID.
Yep.
2021.
I want to go tee up this one for you, Justin, because you've had a lot to say about this whole edge situation. And now, okay, of course, as Brandon puts out, with no Hassan Reddick, there's even more strain on it.
Yep.
He says, I guess it's a rotation. Somebody's getting 40%, meaning somebody who could start in place of Hassan Reddick. What's your take on the edge situation? Number one, who's starting, which is probably going to be Michael Clemens, but mm-hmm. how you think the main sort of rotation is going to shape out? And if anybody like a Brayden McGregor or an Eric Watch, you think is now a lock to make the 53 after this?
So I'm going to operate under the assumption that Hassan Reddick is on the week one roster. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but I'm going to operate under the assumption of that for now. If that is true, I think there are two D-line spots open on the defensive line because your locks are Hassan Reddick, Will McDonald, Jermaine Johnson, Michael Clemens, and then D-tackle, Quinnen Williams, Javon Kinlaw, Solomon Thomas, Leckie Fotu. Those are your eight locks. I think the Jets carry 10 defensive linemen. They can carry 9. Robert Saleh has usually preferred to carry 10. So I think the two spots that are up for grabs, you're looking at guys like Tack McKinley, Eric Watts, Brayden McGregor, Leonard Taylor, guys like that. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be Tanzel Smart. It's not going to be Bruce Hector. Jalen Holmes, I think, has an outside shot, but he's probably more of a practice squad guy. So really, the guys you're looking at are Tack McKinley and then the undrafted guys. That's what you're looking at.
You think McKinley's making it?
I think McKinley makes it. I think McKinley has been easily the best of all of them. I think he's probably been the Jets' best defensive lineman this summer, both impressing as a pass rusher and as a run defender. I don't know what it is about Robert Saleh, but he finds a way with these guys, with these edge rushers. And McKinley was out of football all of last year. He didn't even play in the NFL last year. He hasn't played since 2022. He's had plenty of injury concerns. He was unfortunately underwhelming in Atlanta. He's bounced around since then. He looks like a new player this year. Obviously, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I think not only should he be a lock for the roster, he should be a pretty decent part of the rotation, especially if Hassan Reddick is not there week one. Tack McKinley should be playing a lot. Like, he should be playing 25-30% of snaps. I truly believe that because he's had a really, really good summer. So I think McKinley is one of those spots. And then I think this Saturday is going to be determining who that last spot is going to. If you asked me going into the summer, Eric Watts would have been my choice, and he might still be my choice, but I think he's been a little outplayed and overshadowed by Brayden McGregor. Has had a couple of really strong weeks, and he led the Jets with 3 pressures last week in preseason. I think he was the only guy with more than 1 pressure. He had a really good play as well on, it was like a little end around reverse where he just drove his dude all the way in the backfield. Didn't get a stat for it, but I forget who was the one who cleaned it up and made the tackle for loss, but it was all blown up by McGregor. I thought he's looked really good. And that's another dude who has, I think, a pretty high ceiling because of his athletic potential. He's, what is he, 6'5", 265, something like that. Like, Dude's a really good athlete for his
McKinley,
size.
McKinley, you're saying?
No. McGregor.
Oh, Brayden McGregor.
I think he's like 6'5", 265 or 260 or something like that. Like, he's got good size.
6'6", 254.
There you go.
Oh, 267 says Wikipedia.
I don't buy it. That's probably what Michigan listed him at. I don't.
4.77 in the 40-yard dash. So yeah. Regardless of that, that's not bad.
It's not at all. He's a really good athlete. I think his upside is there. And I love Eric Watts, and the Jets gave him the most guaranteed money of any undrafted player. And I would love it if somebody else can step up and maybe play that Michael Clemens role, because I don't particularly like Michael Clemens in the Michael Clemens role. I wish they still had John. I wish it was still the John Franklin Myers role, but instead it's the Michael Clemens role. So I wish maybe we had somebody else step up and take on that role, but Watts has been pretty underwhelming in the preseason. He hasn't really flashed at all. I think he's been kind of washed out in some run plays and really not getting any pressures. So unless he has a big performance on Saturday, maybe they give it to a guy like McGregor. I think it's going to be harder for someone like Leonard Taylor to get that spot because they already have 4 D tackles. I don't know if they need a fifth. And I think he's probably someone they're just going to try and stash in their practice squad. Maybe another team picks him up. I don't know. But they also didn't give him a ton of guaranteed money. I know he was a really high-profile undrafted player, but
5-star recruit too.
I think McGregor might have gotten more guaranteed money than Taylor, or about the same. I think it was like 100K or something, and definitely a lot less than Watts. So the investment isn't like they didn't invest a ton into him. So I think Taylor's probably gonna be a practice squad guy. I think he's still got some growing to do, but I don't know. I think McKinley's got it, and maybe that last spot comes down to Watts versus McGregor.
Brandon says Clemens always seems to go for fakes and misdirections. His discipline worries me more than his time.
We saw that last game. And discipline in more than one way, I would argue.
Well, I will say, though, like, I do think that he – I don't think he's necessarily a bad player. I think he could have a role on a lot of good teams. I don't think he's, like – I think he's an average player, which there's nothing wrong with it. Like, the role that they had him in the last 2 years, I didn't mind it at all.
Yeah, he was fine. I thought as his rookie, he was better as a rookie than he was last year. His rookie season, he was genuinely a very good run defender. Pass rush potentials or the pass rush upside is not – really shown itself much, but that his run defense his rookie year was very good. Thought it took a step back last year. Haven't been thoroughly impressed by him in the preseason. So I don't know. I don't know where I am at him as like an NFL or where I am with him as an NFL player right now. If I had my druthers,
I would just have him try to bulk up and just be like a full-time DT and not this like maybe Franklin Myers hybrid-y role.
Yeah, I don't think he's not athletic enough for that. Like he shouldn't be any rep that I watch him pass rush from an edge rush position, like, you know, whatever. Like I think that's a wasted rep. I cannot even think of it. I'm sure it's happened. I can't remember the last time I saw him win a pass rush move on the edge, like against the tackle.
But I've seen him win inside a bunch of times.
I've seen that happen. But I can't, because he's not quick enough. He's not athletic enough. He only has the power move. That's all it is. And if he gets stonewalled on that, then his pass rush arsenal just isn't there.
Now, it's a really good power move, but that's...
Yeah, he's as strong as hell.
He's just a strong, scary man.
Yeah, the dude's a monster, but it's just his pass rush arsenal isn't there. It's very limited. And if the run defense could get back to what it was his rookie year, I think that's good. I'll be happy with him as a player. I thought it's like a bit, pretty decent step back last year.
He seems like a guy who once he got done football, he'd be into like wrestling. He seems like he's perfect for that. He's got that like sort of build.
Remember when he had the photo shoot? Was it last year? We had like the barbed wire bat and stuff. He's an entertainer. Dude's
he's going to be New Jack.
Yes. Oh my God. RIP New Jack.
Hopefully not that bad. He's not going to kill a guy in the ring like New Jack almost did. But
I don't know, man. Michael Clemens is a scary guy. I don't want to mess him.
I like when he was a rookie too, that everybody was immediately like, they didn't even do like a lot of rookie hazing stuff. They're like, all right, we'll leave that guy alone.
I mean, he turns 27 like very soon, right? When does he turn 27? It's this year.
I think like in a month or so.
Oh, no, that's right. I knew this. It's today. Today is Michael Clemens' birthday. I forgot about this. Hey. I knew that because I post on the Jadez Facebook. Today is Michael Clemens' birthday. It's Sean Green's birthday. And I think it's Mickey Shuler's birthday.
Happy birthday, Michael Clemens.
Dude, yeah.
How is he a week older than me? Do we look the same age?
No, man.
Me and Michael Clemens.
He could bench press five of you. Like
five of me.
Yes. Maybe probably.
You remember when A'shaun Robinson was coming out?
Yeah, yes.
And I'm like, how there's no way he's 23 years old. I just don't believe it. He's like 44.
Yeah. This is, I think, the most we've talked about Michael Clemens too. So it's fitting that it's on his birthday.
It's a happy birthday, Michael Clemens.
Yeah.
Another battle that we hinted at this earlier, but I think the wide receiver battle might be one that a lot of fans have their eyes on. We certainly do too. And looking at the depth chart right now, we mentioned that they're pretty much five locks. Wilson, yeah. Gibson, Williams, Corley, Lazard. Those guys are locks. I think they carry at least six. I don't think they carry seven. So that's just me guessing. I think they carry six, which means only one guy can make the final roster. And to me, I know Brandon Smith was impressive. I still think he's a practice squad guy. It comes down to Irv Charles and Jason Brownlee. And it comes down to which of these two can improve the weakest area in their game. Because Irv Charles was thought of as just a special teams guy only. Mm-hmm. But Camp has shown, man, he's made some improvements as a receiver. He's had some nice catches. They've said his route running has been really improved. Maybe he's improved up there. And then Brownlee, I'm going to be honest, I'm not keeping up on special team snap counts and Jets OTAs, but if he's made some improvements there, I'm really torn with this. It's really a 50-50. But knowing how the Jets have operated, I think they keep Charles. I think they like the special teams, especially with Justin Hardy, what happened with him. I think that they need like their next star, their next Steve Tasker, their next really great special teamer. And Irv Charles could be that guy. And I was talking up Brownlee, but I think right now, if they had to decide today, I think it's Charles. And I think Brownlee will need to work a little bit to overcome that.
This is good, because I think we're going to disagree. I don't think they keep Irv Charles.
We're not allowed to disagree at all. What are you talking about?
I don't think they keep Irv Charles. And I don't think it's necessarily because of Irv Charles. I think it's because of Quantes Diggers. That's my take. I think that Quantes Diggers has shown a lot as a gunner in the preseason, and he's been working there a lot in the summer. And if they're happy with Brandon Echols and Quantes Diggers as their gunners, you don't really need Irv Charles. You don't need him. And I think they'll keep him around because, say, you know, one cornerback injury, knock on wood, or Sauce Gardner or DJ Reed get hurt. Now, boom, suddenly Quantes Diggers or Brandon Echols are starting. You probably don't want a starting corner as your gunner. Then maybe they can elevate Irv Charles for the practice squad, because he probably wouldn't get claimed. He'd probably be good on the practice squad. He's like, what, a 26-year-old special teamer? Like
27.
27, there you go. So he's already an older guy anyways. I don't think he would get claimed. So I think they might keep him around in the practice squad. But if they're happy with Stiggers and Echols as their gunners, and I think they should be based on what we've seen. Echols, I think Echols is a very underrated gunner. That's definitely something that people don't really talk about with him, because he got overshadowed by Justin Hardy. Then he got overshadowed by Irv Charles last year. He's very good at it. And so I think if they're happy with those guys, you don't need Charles, because while Charles has maybe made some strides as a receiver, I'm not going to keep him. You know, maybe he is like a slightly better gunner than Stiggers at this stage, but
I think he's like 6'4", 220. Like, that's a big receiver.
He is a big receiver. But if, you know, say he's a slightly better gunner than like Stiggers, or even slightly better than Echols, is that difference, you know, enough to make him make the roster over a guy like Brownlee or even Brandon Smith? I'm gonna keep plugging Brandon Smith, because I'm gonna push for him to make a roster spot. But is that difference enough? Because I think like the gap between Brownlee and Smith as a receiver over Charles is probably a lot wider than the gap between Charles and Stiggers and Echols as a gunner. So that's how I think I would view it. I almost view him as a separate roster spot. I think the wide receiver six spot is like completely unrelated to Irv Charles. I think they keep Irv Charles as like a special teams guy, but I think he's also competing with like Brandon Codrington. Maybe he can steal a roster spot, or maybe you can throw in like, oh, you know, maybe they keep an extra special teamer, or they keep Israel Banacanda, or they keep an extra special teamer, or they keep, you know, maybe Kenny Aboah. Maybe that's Kenny Aboah's spot, or maybe it's Anthony Firkser's spot. I don't really view it as like, okay, they're going to carry six or seven wide receivers. I view it as like Brandon Smith and Jason Brownlee and whoever else is in there. It would have been Malik Taylor before he got hurt. Any of those other guys, they're competing for a wide receiver spot. I don't think Irv Charles is competing for a wide receiver spot. I think it's a separate conversation entirely with him. So if they do decide to keep Charles, I think they keep seven. But if they don't, which right now I'm leaning no, I think they keep six. But I just think it's like a different conversation. Like, too often we talk about like, oh, here's the position battle at this one spot. Special teams muddies the waters. Like, I think that completely muddies the waters. I think it'll be like, oh, do we want to keep Irv Charles for a special teams value, or do we want to keep Israel Abanacanda on the roster as a game day inactive, but as our fourth running back? Like, I think that's the discussion they're more so having.
I'm going to do a quick exercise, and I'm going to ask you two questions. Don't even think about it, just whatever comes to the top of your head.
Okay. I like these games around like the 40-minute mark of our shows.
Okay. So first one, do the Jets keep Israel Abanacanda on their 53-man roster?
Yes.
Ooh, okay.
I don't feel confident about that. I say yes, and he's a game day inactive. I think he's done enough, and he's impressed enough that make me think they might do it. But again, he's going to be like fit player number 53 if he makes it. Like, and I think they'll try and sneak him through the waivers. For Israel Abanacanda's sake, I think he'd be better off elsewhere. Yeah. I think
it's like a Zonovan Knight thing.
Yeah, what he's shown this summer is like, it makes me think that he can play at the NFL level. I just don't think it's a good fit with the Jets at all. Like, I think he's such a poor fit in the gap power scheme that they're going to run. Now, obviously, I was talking to someone on Twitter about this. Obviously, they're not going to only run gap scheme. They're going to run some wide zone as well. But I just think put him in like, and I don't want to speak this into existence, but like put him in Miami, put him in San Francisco. Like, I think he could thrive. I don't know about like be a star, but that's
who doesn't thrive as a running back in those systems.
Yeah, dude. If Ty Johnson played for the Miami Dolphins, he'd be a 1,000-yard rusher.
Okay, next segment.
I believe with every fiber of my body, I am a Ty Johnson stan. That man is good. He's been good whenever he's been given a chance. And if he played in a system, because his biggest flaw is like, well, he doesn't run with a ton of power, I would say. But like, dude, put him in a fucking wide zone scheme. He's going to cook. Like, he's going to cook so hard. I know he's in Buffalo, but like, Put him in San Francisco. I think he kills it.
And he's what, like the third string back in Buffalo?
Yeah, he was their second string. He was really good when he was given the opportunity last year. He was their second string going into the year this summer, and then he got hurt.
And well, then they drafted Ray Davis.
Dude. Well, they drafted Ray, but Ty Johnson was well ahead of him. And then Ty Johnson got hurt, missed like most of the summer, and Ray Davis had taken the job. And that sucks.
They have Frank Gore Jr. fighting for a spot there.
With his former team, his dad's former team.
It's crazy that there's a Frank Gore Jr. in the NFL right now. All right, number two.
Okay.
Starting dime cornerback week one is?
Brandon Echols. I think Echols.
Over Stiggers and over JBC.
Yes, I think it'll be Echols, Stiggers, Bernard Converse. I'll be interested to see. I think there's a chance JBC is inactive on game days. I don't think they keep 10 active defensive backs unless they want to do like Isaiah Oliver inactive or whoever. But I think one of Oliver or JBC is probably inactive. But I think Stiggers has earned his role in special teams. I think he's going to be active.
That was my follow. But you would even make Stiggers active over JBC.
I think he offers a lot of special teams right now. That, and not that JBC doesn't. I just think Stiggers is ahead of him. Clearly, he's ahead of him on like the gunner depth chart because that's what he's been doing this summer. So
now we move on to our last topic, which is talking Jets Giants, the annual battle of New York in the preseason that obviously will produce some let's call it tepid game day action. It's usually like a 16-13 affair between the backups, but the joint practices have been what I've been watching. And if you were on social media at all day, you will know that after they kind of struggled yesterday offense wise, this was a tremendous day for the Jets.
Yeah.
Although Malik Nabers caught a pass on Sauce. Ha ha ha. Yeah. Outside of that, Breece Hall had a really nice touchdown pass. And then he was even trolling Isaiah Simmons by like checking his ankles to make sure he didn't break them. Jason Brownlee was on the receiving end of a Tyrod Taylor deep throw. Garrett Wilson was on the receiving end of an Aaron Rodgers throw that went like 60, 70 yards. The offense is cooking. Now, again, the always question that I always have in the preseason, or at least the battle I always try to figure out what's going on with, is every time there's a great defensive play, is that good defense or bad offense? Here, the gray area is removed. The offense is just cooking. The funniest part, though, and the best, most encouraging part was I've heard so little about Tyron Smith in the preseason, despite the fact he's pretty much going to be a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. And he left, and now he's coming to save the Jets' offensive line. Now he's actually playing and practicing like with an actual live game rep speed. And supposedly he's just shutting down Kayvon Thibodeau and Brian Burns, both of them.
Two very good edge rushers. Brian Burns is fantastic.
I know Fashanu's the future, but man, if Tyron Smith is Tyron Smith, whatever that is, oh, I'm going to be so excited watching him, man. It just sounds so awesome. I'm jealous for Cowboys fans who had this for 11, 12 years.
You know the rule of joint practices, Mike. If the Jets look great, then they matter a lot. If the Jets don't look good, it's just practice. Who cares? You know, they're not trying.
Better now than the season.
Yeah, you know the rule. But today, the Jets look great. So let's talk about how important that is and how much that means for the season. It's great. I mean, we got the reports a couple days ago. It was a really, really bad practice. I think it might have been Monday or Tuesday. I forget which day it was. I think it was Monday. Monday's practice was like abysmal for the offense, like the worst Rodgers had looked with the Jets. So it's very nice to see him participating in this joint practice because he didn't participate in the last joint practice, right? Because of the weather, right? So this was his – hold on. Did they do joint practices with both of their first two preseason opponents? Yeah, right?
Yeah, they definitely did with Washington.
And they did with Carolina too. So, okay. Yeah. So I forget which one Rodgers was – I think it was Washington he was held out of due to the weather.
That was Washington. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's very nice to see him out there and dominating. And Garrett Wilson apparently was destroying the Giants secondary all day. That's great to hear. I wouldn't expect anything less. I saw varying reports about what Daniel Jones was doing. I saw some people being like, oh, yeah, he's completing a lot of passes. And then Connor Hughes was like, well, he's attempted one pass over 10 yards all day. And I would say that's probably a win for the Jets defense if they're keeping Daniel Jones from throwing anywhere past 10 yards downfield. But this is what you'd hope. Like, the Jets are and should be a significantly better team than the Giants, who Giants on paper have a bottom three roster in the NFL, bottom five. Like, it's really bad.
The Brian Burns contract, it got praised. I'm like, does that seem like the right place, right time for that team?
It is weird timing. I think he's a fantastic player. He's an incredible player, Brian Burns. Like, he's so good. It is a weird timing thing with them, but maybe they're just hoping. Look, I mean, it's probably the last year of Daniel Jones. They are likely going to draft a quarterback next year. In today's NFL, you want to already start building around that guy, maybe even before you get him. So it's like they're acquiring players now for their window that isn't open yet. Like, I think is kind of what they're viewing, how they're viewing it. So I get it. But yeah, Brian Burns, fantastic player. It seems like Tyron Smith did a really good job against them. He shut down Kayvon Thibodeau. very encouraging day. Not really any negative, major negative takeaways from what I've seen. Honestly, the biggest takeaway is that the offensive line apparently dominated. Like that was one of the big things that I saw. And that is so encouraging, because this was all five starting offensive linemen. They all played today. Tyron Smith did team drills. Elijah Vera Tucker did team drills. Morgan Moses did team drills. The entire starting offensive line was playing, and they did really, really well against the Giants' defensive line. That is really good. Like, if you're going to name one strength of this Giants team, it's their D-line. Dexter Lawrence is an incredible player. And some Jets fans might, I don't, do I want to start the whole Dexter Lawrence, Quinn Williams debate? I won't.
Me out of the bottle with that.
We'll go there. He's a top three defensive tackle in football, as is Quinn Williams. I will confidently say those. I think the top three in no particular order: Chris Jones, Dexter Lawrence, and Quinn Williams. No particular order.
So we won't start.
Yeah, we won't start that debate. But Dexter Lawrence, incredible player. Brian Burns, incredible player. Kayvon Thibodeau, he's slightly overrated, but still a very good player. That D-line's great. And the fact that the Jets offensive line seemingly won that battle today, that's really encouraging to me.
I will say the one thing I'm concerned about with Jets fans on social media is Robert Saleh's getting to that stage. It's not like Aaron Boone with the Yankees. Like, Aaron Boone, I think, is not a very good manager with the Yankees. I think wins a lot because he gets bailed out by Soto and Judge a lot. But, like, he'll make 10 decisions in a game, and every time one of them goes wrong, everybody criticizes him. Or even things that are very minor, like, he's hitting this guy seventh instead of eighth. Fire this guy. Like, that's not fire this guy bad, but
that's Yankees fans, man. That's
Saleh's getting close to that, because like we like Saleh more than most here, I think, because we thought he kind of got screwed. But I mean, anyone would have got screwed. You go in thinking you have Aaron Rodgers, and then all of a sudden it's 2022 part two with Zach Wilson. Like, so we felt bad for him there, but now he's saying, all right, Aaron Rodgers is not going to play against the Giants. Any other coach, that's just understood. Now it's what we're going to go into the season cold. Rodgers isn't healthy. Like, no matter what he does now, there's such a vocal anti-Saleh group that, like, anything he does wrong,
I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, it's inevitable with the record he has through three seasons. It's inevitable. And that's not
we've been through a lot of bad Jets coaches.
Yes.
Like, even the end of Todd Bowles, which was bad, I don't remember it being like this level.
Well, Bowles had a 10-win
season. Saleh, I think, is probably a better, I don't know about a better coach. He's close. He's never had a quarterback.
Bowles had a 10-win season. I think that's the difference there. But Todd Bowles still got a lot of shit. Like, people hated Todd. When Todd Bowles was fired, like, the year before he was fired, it was like everyone was calling to fire Todd Bowles.
But I don't think it was this level where it was like every single micromanaged decision is just, like, no matter what Saleh does, there's a problem with it.
I think it's inevitable when you have a team like the Jets who have been so bad for so long. And more specifically, even with this regime, like, as much credit as I want to give Joe Douglas for building this roster, and as much as I want to be like, hey, Robert Saleh has been given a raw deal, because he has, and we can have those nuanced discussions, and nuance is important, the narrative is still going to be the same unless they win. You have to win games to change the narrative. It does not matter. If the Jets go out and flop this year, if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt again and everyone gets fired at the end of the year, the narrative for Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh is going to be that they're bad at their jobs. Is that true? I don't know, and maybe we'll never even find out, but that's going to be the narrative. The nuance matters, and the nuance is why we have shows like this and we could talk about it and stuff. But if you're just seeing tweets scrolling across the timeline and people are calling in WFAN, they don't care about the nuance. Like, they're not there to talk about that stuff. I know I'm preaching in the choir here. I know you agree with me, and I know if you're watching the show, probably a lot of you do as well. But
I just feel like that's bleeding over into the mainstream way Saleh's viewed.
Is the mainstream not for casuals? When has the mainstream cared about nuance, Mike? When has that been? Not in a long time, if ever. I don't think the mainstream cares about that stuff. The mainstream.
I want to make a comment really quick, though, because I think this illustrates some of the point. I don't think Brandon's being like as anti-Saleh, like sharp in a way, but I think it's kind of a point where a lot of fans are like, fans do want to see Rodgers get up, get hit, and stand up after. And
sure.
What if he doesn't? What if he gets hit in the preseason and he doesn't? Then what?
I get the sentiment for wanting to play. I don't think I have a strong opinion either way. If Rodgers played in the preseason, and this is how, by the way, this is a lot of Jets fans would feel the same way. I feel like if Robert Saleh came out and said, Aaron Rodgers is going to play the first two, you know, drives of the last preseason game, Jets fans would be like, great decision, Robert. Awesome job. We should see him play. But if they hold him out, it's like, great decision, Bobby Saleh. we don't want to see him play. That's, we don't want to risk injury. And then you obviously have the critics that would do the same thing. That'd be like, oh, you're risking injury versus, oh, you're, you know, he's going to be rusty, all this stuff. I think people already just made up their minds with that stuff. Me, I genuinely don't care either way. If they played him in the first drive, they played him for two drives, I'd be cool with it. I think the biggest test is going to be when we see him week one. And I think that's what Brandon's talking about, or at least that's how I'm taking that. It's like week one, when Aaron Rodgers takes his first hit, how does he respond to that? Because he hasn't taken a hit in a couple of years now, because he didn't even take a hit. I guess he took a hit, obviously, unfortunately, in the game where he got injured, but he's taken very few hits over the last couple of years. So I'm very interested to see how he responds. I'm very interested to see how he bounces back. But playing him in a preseason, I don't really care. And from what I've imagined, it does not sound like they're going to play him. Robert Saleh did speak to reporters today and said that he has made his decision, but that he did not tell the players yet. So he has not told the media. We don't know if he's going to play, if Rodgers is going to play, if the starter is going to play. I would be shocked. And I think part of it is because Robert Saleh today was talking about how they had a really heavy workload planned for today's joint practice against the Giants. They're kind of ramping it up for the last few days of training camp. I think that's code for, we're not going to play the starters. We're just going to do what we do here. We're gonna really, you know, run these guys hard for the last couple of days, and then they won't play in the preseason.
And I think not to praise the Patriots too much, but I like Gerard Mayo's way of doing it, where he said, if you get into a fight in camp, yeah, you're a starter, you're going to play in the preseason. If you're like a bench player, then you're not.
See, I like that. I like that in theory, but then if that was like in reality, and Sauce Gardner somehow got into a fight and he's playing the fourth quarter of a preseason game, I'm not going to be happy about it.
I don't know about the fourth quarter. I don't know, the first half or something. That'd be. I do like, just in a set in the tone kind of way. I think that's
Remember when Avery Williamson tore his ACL in the second half of a preseason game when he was a starting linebacker for the Jets? Remember that?
I do remember that.
Remember those days? Was that Adam Gase or was that Todd Bowles? I think it was Gase.
I think Avery Williamson was Gase. Maybe it was the last year of Bowles.
He might have been both.
He was both. All right, so he played the last year of Bowles. First year of Gase, he tore his ACL, and Gase traded him.
Oh, great. So that was Gase's first summer with the Jets, too, and he's playing the starters in the second half of the preseason, and one of their starters tears the ACL. What a great coach, man. What a great coach.
What a fantastic coach. I saw, you know how like recency bias, there was something else going around on Twitter where it was like the Mount Rushmore of awful coaches, and for some reason like Bruce Arians was on there.
I saw that. That was such a bad thing. I saw that.
Yeah, I'm like, you got to put Gase on there.
Bruce Arians being on the list of worst coaches is crazy. Like there's so many coaches. Yeah. Also, this is actually a great point Brandon brings up in chat. Says Rodgers is a package deal. A lot of people would need to play with him. That's very true. If you're playing Aaron Rodgers, that means you're also risking the help of Tyron Smith, most likely. You're risking the health of Elijah Barrett Tucker, of Morgan Moses, probably of Garrett Wilson, guys like that, Breece Hall. Like, you're probably playing the entire starting offense if you're playing Aaron Rodgers, especially the offensive line.
Aaron Rodgers protected by Max Mitchell.
No shot. Like, if Rodgers is playing, Tyron Smith's playing. Like, 100% that has to happen. So I think that's a very really good point that I haven't seen a lot of people talk about, is that, like, okay, there's other guys you're also risking the health of here if you do play Aaron Rodgers. So it's not just Rodgers you got to worry about. Again, I don't have a hard opinion either way. I'm fine with whatever they choose to do. I don't think they're going to play the starters, but that is a really good point for the sitting the starters perspective.
And on that really good point,
what do you actually, Mike, what do you think about that? Do you think they should play starters?
You're saying absolutely not. Okay. Absolutely not.
Okay.
But like, that's what I was saying earlier. Like, not only absolutely not, I feel like a lot of other teams, most other teams in the league, are not going to play their starters.
Yeah. Dude, one of these
maybe
days.
How many was one or two?
One of these days, Andy Reid's going to get Patrick Mahomes hurt and everyone's going to lose their minds.
Exactly. But like 28, 29 of the 32 teams are not going to play any starters. Nobody will think anything of it. Robert Saleh says Aaron Rodgers is not going to play. Yeah. Suddenly, it's a horrible coaching decision. That's what I was getting at.
Even the Panthers didn't play Bryce Young. And I don't even know if they're
going to play. That made no sense.
That's crazy to me. Like, that is nuts. This dude has 1 year of experience under his belt, was not good, needs all the reps he can get. That's crazy.
How about the Falcons not playing Michael Penix?
There's no logic with it.
He showed me enough. Well, is he going to start then? Well, no, because we signed a guy for 4 years and $180 million.
He'll start in 4 years. He'll start in 4 years, you know, don't worry. He'll start.
Well, 4 years when you got to give him a new contract.
Yes, exactly. But it'll be a Jordan Love thing. I think they're literally looking at it as like, hey, we can Jordan Love Michael Penix. I think that's what they're doing.
Michael Penix is 24 and they picked him eighth, not 25th. Yes,
it's a different situation. I don't think Penix's ceiling is nearly as high as Jordan Love's. Very different situation, but I think that's
Jordan Love. Okay, one thing too, I know this is not Jets related. Jordan Love had half of a good year. The first half, he was bad. Then he had a crazy 9-10 game heater. And I've seen Jordan Love MVP takes. Like, we gotta cool it with the Jordan Love.
I don't think people are putting him in the same tier as like CJ Stroud. And I'm like, no, we're not doing that. Like, I'm not ready to put him in the same tier as CJ Stroud.
I'm not ready to put him in the top 14 quarterbacks. He had half of a good year. The other half, they were saying the Packers are gonna pick another quarterback again.
I'd probably put him in the top 15. Yeah, I think I'd put him in top 15.
That's a good spot for the most expensive quarterback ever. Probably the top 15.
Well, I mean, look, man, they had to pay him. Like, what are they going to do? They had to pay him. It's like Tua. Like, Tua had to get paid, you know? They have to do it.
With that, thank you guys for tuning into the Jet Press Podcast. You know where to find us on Apple and Google, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast. That's where we are and all of them. And if you like the show, you could subscribe. You could like the stream. Both of those things are really big helps. Justin.
Yes, sir.
Sign us off.
We got 1 week until roster cuts. Next time we're doing a show, it'll be the day after roster cuts. So we'll be reacting all of that. We react into, you know, the preseason, and we got, 2 weeks then until the regular season starts, man? It is coming up really soon.
49ers, which, you know, no easing them into the season this time. This is
another Monday nighter to start the year, man.
Monday night against the best team in the league on the road. Okay.
It's going to be wild, man. It's going to be wild. We'll do a little cheap plug really quick. As Mike mentioned at the top of the show, we got his interview up with Ian O'Connor, who of course wrote the incredible biography on Aaron Rodgers, Out of the Darkness, I believe is what it's called.
Mystery of Aaron Rodgers.
Absolutely. Check the book out. Check the interview. We also did an interview. I don't think I got to mention this last week. I think I mentioned it was happening. Got an interview up on the YouTube channel right now with Jets punter Thomas Morstead, friend of the show. We've done a lot of those. This was another fun one. Thomas is the man. Morstead is awesome. We talked about actually one of the parts of that book that we're just mentioning. Thomas Morstead actually called Aaron Rodgers after Aaron Rodgers' injury, and he spoke to him on the phone and cried with him. And we talked about that phone call as part of the interview, as well as a few other things as well. Morstead's the man. Definitely check that out. Keep an eye on some other stuff that we might have coming up here on the Jet Press Podcast. But until next time and until next week, thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @BuyMeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at Justin T. Freed. Follow Jet Press at the Jet Press. Download the Jet Press Podcast wherever you get your podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and live immediately following every single Jets game during the regular season. Thank you all for listening to the show. I've been Justin Freed. That's been Mike Luciano. We'll see you guys next time.
We will see you folks next week. We can start talking about regular season football because it is finally almost here. I don't know what that was, Justin, but
excited. Yes.
All right, that's how you choose the show.
3 p.m. inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouth-watering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.